step into the corridors of history with Bürgermeisterin, the podcast that breathes life into the bygone years. I'm Julia, your guide on this expedition through the pages of yesteryear, where each episode unveils the untold stories and pivotal moments that have defined our world. Today I've got a story about the time when Napoleon III tried to buy Luxembourg from Germany in 1827, but Luxembourg ended up getting independence instead. So there is something that came up during the industrialization wave of Luxembourg, which I covered in the previous story. Once upon a time in the whimsical world of 1867, when international diplomacy was as unpredictable as a squirrel on caffeine, France decided it wanted to get its hands on Luxembourg. Yep, you heard that right, Luxembourg. It's like the time your eccentric uncle thought he could trade his vintage rubber duck collection for a bloody private island. This little episode in history, known as the Luxembourgish Crisis, wasn't your everyday tug of war. You see, France, under the rule of Napoleon III, had grand dreams of expanding its territory like a kid in a candy store. And the candy in question was territories. Now, let's dive into a piece of history that's as convoluted as trying to assemble a piece of IKEA furniture without the instructions. So, in the Rule Book of Life, the Congress of Vienna of 1815 decided to award the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg to the King of the United Kingdom of the Netherlands. The deal went something like this. Hi, King of Netherlands, we're really sorry about your loss of Nassau, Dillenburg, Siegen, Hadamar, and Diez to Prussia. That's a bit of a bummer, isn't it? How about we throw you in Luxembourg as a consolation prize? It wasn't just about Luxembourg being a pawn in this game of diplomatic chess. The Dutch king got the keys to Luxembourg with a fancy title and everything. It's like winning a jackpot and getting a free spa weekend on top. He could rule Luxembourg like a boss with full control and sovereignty, independent of his right to the Dutch throne, which he'd only been sitting on since 1814. Talk about a double power play! So, you see, there was a peculiar personal union between the Netherlands, which, by the way, included present-day Netherlands and Belgium, and Luxembourg. It was like two neighbors who shared a lawnmower but had separate backyards. Now, here is where it gets even spicier than a ghost pepper in a salsa contest. After the Belgian Revolution and the London Conference in 1830, a conference that was probably more hush-hush than a secret spy meeting, Belgium managed to snatch the French-speaking part of Luxembourg from the King of the Netherlands. It was like the last piece of cake disappearing at a birthday party. Everyone was looking at the empty plate in disbelief. That's where the Province de Luxembourg in Belgium comes from, y'all. Who would have known? So Luxembourg ended up being the ultimate example of sharing. Two countries, one name, and a whole lot of drama. It was like the world's most complicated soap opera plot, and it was just the prologue. In a nutshell, Luxembourg's history is like trying to follow a plot in a telenovela. One moment's here, then it's there, and it's always leaving you with more questions than answers. So the German-speaking part of Luxembourg, which is the actual Luxembourg today, territorially speaking, in the 1800s was like the small-town neighbour who's part of every club in the neighbourhood, whether they like it or not. First, they were cozy members of the Austrian Dominated, German Confederation. It's like being in a club where the leader never lets you dance the way you want, but you still show up because they have free snacks. Then, just to spice things up, Luxembourg joined the Prussia-dominated German Custom Union in 1842. It's like signing up for a gym where the trainers make you lift more weight than you can handle, but at least you get free protein shakes. By 1848, Luxembourg decided it was time to adult up and got its very own constitution and government. It's like the teenage neighbor who decides to build a treehouse because they want some space from the grown-ups. Also, the city of Luxembourg wasn't just any city. It was a German federal fortress officially known as Fortress Luxembourg. It was like the impenetrable treehouse of the neighborhood, and Prussia had the keys. The majority of the garrison there was provided by Prussia, and they were about as popular as a rainy day at the beach. The locals didn't quite fancy their Prussian guests, But they did bring in the dough to the otherwise economically shy and industrially undeveloped Luxembourg. It's like having that one flatmate, right, who's annoying, but pays rent on time. I mean, we all had one. I did. He used to smoke pot and bang on people's doors like he'd die if they didn't open. True story. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The German Confederation went poof after the German War in 1866, where German Confederation and Austria was versus Prussia. And the Prussian-controlled North German Confederation was born. That meant Prussia had no business stationing its troops in Luxembourg anymore. But guess what? They decided to linger around in the fortress. It's like that flatmate trying to get into the apartment even after you reported him to the landlord and sent his stuff off to where it came from. Again, true story. As the Austro-Prussian War was in full swing, Napoleon III was secretly chatting up Prussia like a gossip-loving neighbor over the fence. It's like sharing juicy neighborhood gossip while your street is being invaded by a marching band. Otto von Bismarck, the Prussian Prime Minister, wasn't exactly playing hard to get. He wanted to chat because he had no clue how Austria and its southern German Poles would react if a brawl broke out between France and Prussia. Personally, Bismarck, such a snake, hey? But a genius one. Here's the kicker. Bismarck had a card up his sleeve. He told Napoleon III, "You can't just take chunks of Germany, but if you promise not to mess up with our German unification process, we won't mind you grabbing some land from Belgium and Luxembourg. Just call it within the French nation and we're good." What the WTF? Those were not even Prussian territories. Imagine Battelle, right, going to Portugal, all being like, "Hey, you can have Italy. If you don't put your nose into us pulling off Men in Black and whipping the memory of all the Portuguese we've got here, converting them into core Luxembourgers." Like, what? The audacity, eh? France wasn't done there. They were looking for a full-fledged alliance with Prussia. They wanted to be the dynamic duo of the neighborhood, ready to tag team any pesky outsiders like Great Britain. Bismarck even kept notes, probably because he knew that neighborly handshakes might turn into finger pointing later on. It's like taking screenshots of your text messages just in case your neighbor denies ever borrowing your lawnmower. Now, imagine the world of Napoleon III, where annexing territory was like collecting rare Pokemon cards, and his most coveted card was Luxembourg. It was as if he would have spotted the shiniest jewel in the neighborhood crown, and he just had to have it. Napoleon III had a cunning plan. He would trade a bit of neighbor's garden to spruce up his own. He suggested, "Prussia, how about you hand over East Frisia to the Netherlands, and in exchange I'll graciously accept Luxembourg. It's a win-win." But oh, the plot thickened. Dutch King William III was initially like, "No way, I'm not selling my Luxembourg." He would even try to cozy up to the North German Confederation, thinking it would protect him from French ambitions. But Bismarck, being Bismarck, shut that door with a firm no. However, when times got tough for William III and his piggy bank started looking a little light, he had a change of heart. In 1867, he decided to say yes to Napoleon's third offer of 5 million florins for Luxembourg. It was like realizing that selling your Pokemon card collection might be worth it when you're a bit short on rent. Fast forward to the moment when secrets started to unravel like a ball of yarn in a cat cafe. The Prussian-South German alliances of 1866, a well-kept secret until then, suddenly saw the light of day. It was like everyone found out that your quiet neighbor, Bob, was secretly a professional log guitarist in a heavy metal band. Amidst all this newfound knowledge, Dutch King William III, who was already feeling nervous about being dragged into a potential Franco-German showdown, decided to throw a curveball. He said, "Hi Bismarck, I'll only go through with this Luxembourg purchase if you give it the official thumbs up." This change of heart didn't exactly go unnoticed. News of the purchase attempt spread like wildfire in the neighborhood, and suddenly, everyone had an opinion. The German public was having none of it. To them, Luxembourg was like the family hail room they couldn't bear to part with. It was the homeland of the Luxembourg dynasty with a lineage that boasted five Roman-German kings and three emperors. It was practically German through and through. It's like trying to convince your grandma to sell her cherished antique vase. Not gonna happen! Now, Bismarck found himself in a tricky spot, as he bloody should've. He couldn't keep his earliest secret promises to Napoleon III, which meant he had to advise William III to cancel the purchase. This, of course, didn't sit well with the French public. War drums started beating, and it seemed like conflict was brewing faster than a pot of coffee on a Monday morning. France mobilized its troops, and Bismarck played his trump card by threatening a general mobilization in North Germany. It was like the neighborhood kids throwing water balloons at each other, with tensions rising and everyone waiting for the first big splash. And now the plot thickens even further, like a good mystery novel with a surprising twist. French agents had decided to set up shop right in Luxembourg, causing all sorts of ruckus with the Prussian troops stationed there. It was like hosting a secret party in your neighbor's garage while they were on vacation. Things were getting spicy. Meanwhile, Luxembourg was a melting pot of opinions and movements. Some folks there proudly declared themselves German, while others had a soft spot for France. They weren't just siding with France out of the blue. Many of their struggling fellow Luxembourgers had found jobs there. Oh, how the tables have turned, France, didn't they? Given thousands of people traveling cross-border every single morning from France to work where? In Luxembourg! Holy cannoli, eh? There was a strong movement that said, we like things just the way they are. They launched a petition to the King Grand Duke, basically telling everyone to chill and stay put. Their rallying cry was, Mir welle bleiben, wat mir sind. We want to stay where we are. This movement wasn't just a spontaneous idea. It was secretly kicked off by none other than Prince Henry, the popular governor of Luxembourg and the brother of the King Grand Duke. He was pulling the strings behind the scenes, orchestrating the drama like a puppet master. But wait, the story doesn't end there. International diplomacy jumped into the ring and decided to host a grand showdown. They organized an international conference on the Luxembourg crisis in London, and it all kicked off on May the 7th. Surprisingly, both sides were willing to play nice and compromise. And it all culminated in the grand finale, the so-called Second Treaty of London, signed on May the 11th, 1867. It was like the neighbors finally coming together to resolve their differences at the annual block party, where everyone left with a plate of cookies and a smile. The treaty said, France, you can't have Luxembourg, and Prussia, you better withdraw your garrison and blow up the fortress. It also declared Luxembourg's neutrality in future conflicts, and the bigwigs, France, Great Britain, Prussia, Austria, and Russia, were tasked with babysitting those promises. So, in the end, Luxembourg didn't become part of France. So, in the end, Luxembourg didn't become part of France's toy collection, and the world was saved from Franco-Prussian showdown, at least for a little while. The Luxembourg crisis was like a preview to the main event, the Franco-Prussian War in 1870. But this was more than just a juicy neighborhood drama. For Luxembourg, it was a turning point of monumental importance. The Luxembourgers took matters into their own hands, demolishing the fortress more than the Treaty of London required. It was like they were spring cleaning the whole neighborhood with gusto. The result? Luxembourg City started to flourish and industrialize at lightning speed. Hello, the train network, duh! And here's the kicker. The crisis led to international recognition of Luxembourg as an independent state in 1868. It was like getting your own name on the mailbox instead of sharing it with the house next door.